coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Everybody, how you doing this week? Chris Jordan here, coming at you, well, now from Cedar Park, Texas. We have officially moved studios, moved homes. We're now located in the northern part of the city that's weird. But, welcome to the show, everybody. Episode 45, you know, it dawns on me as we come upon our one-year anniversary as the incarnation of Curious Realm, that we have covered a lot of ground. We have covered a lot of guests. We have talked everything from human trafficking and ancient civilizations to sponsoring events like the Remote Viewing Association, the Near Death Studies Association, every Bigfoot event in the state of Texas, as well as the Texas UFO Con upcoming. Our first guest here in just a couple minutes will be the gentleman who is the organizer and founder of those events, the amazing Craig Woolheater, also founder of Crypto Mundo. We will be talking about the amazing world of cryptids, cryptozoology, where the world of cryptozoology has come to since Craig first stepped in it years ago, so to speak. And what brought him to start hosting events like the Texas Bigfoot Conference. So he's our first guest. After commercial break, we will be joined by our good friend, Daniel Allen Jones, who, of course, we will be getting some coverage with out at the Texas Bigfoot convention this weekend. So it's going to be super fun. He is our guest in the second part during our pre-recorded guest segment, talking about the Haunted Hill House in Mineral Wells. He just had an opportunity to go and give a presentation there at a small paranormal conference, very intimate one, and spend the night at one of the most, they claim the most haunted location in Texas. It's been featured on Travel Channel, all kinds of things. So we will be talking about the history of Hill House, what his experience there was like, and what experiences of other people have been like, recorded paranormal experiences, things like that. So we will be getting into that and so much more after a commercial break. Before we get to our first guest, of course, let's head on over to our Facebook group and check out the news of the week. News of the week brought to you by Curious Realm and Facebook. Out of USA Today, man took magic mushrooms and then assaulted United flight attendants, authorities say. I thought that one was funny. Out of the Lower Colorado River Authority, a new 4-acre maze in the state of Texas is now officially the largest, arboretum or arboretory maze, I guess greenery maze. Out of Variety.com, Tom Cruise's space movie will make him the first, quote, civilian to do a spacewalk outside of the space station. So imagine that. Like, the man does do his own stunts. You got to give him that. And the fact that he is actively, A, going to go film at the International Space Station, but then also go out and do a spacewalk. That is some, here's to you, Mr. Cruise. Out of Gizmodo.com, video, China's gung-toting robot dog gets dropped off by a drone. That's some pretty wild technology. Also, out of Mashable is this video of an amazing gray ooze robot that is meant to go inside your body and grab foreign objects, things like that, and get them out and bring them back out. Out of NPR.org, she wrote a Bigfoot book for kids. It was no small feat. I cannot wait to talk with her. And finally, out of Fizz.org, scientists developed a new printable wearable insect repellent. That is just some of the news that is fit to print out there, folks, coming to you from our Facebook group. While you're on Facebook, make sure to stop on by the Texas Bigfoot Conference. That is the conference that is run by our good friend Craig Woolheater, our guest tonight. Of course, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can find all the episodes. That is where you can download the free app. That's where you can tune in live. That is where you can keep up with our events, and also where you can go and share your story. CuriousRealm.com/story. If you have a cryptid experience, if you have a paranormal experience, if you're a targeted individual, feel free to come and share your story. We have an upload file there for any evidence that you may have, pictures, video, audio, all that good stuff. You can, of course, remain anonymous. So stop on by and check that out. CuriousRealm.com/story. Welcome back to the show, our good friend Craig Woolheater. How are you doing this evening, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing pretty good, Chris, but I have two questions. What's off that? The bat. Number one, in your intro, are you actually recording that in an echo chamber, or is that a digital effect?
That is an analog effect. Unfortunately, I do not own an echo chamber yet. Note the word yet.
Yes.
Okay. Numerous analog effects, things like that over here, and that is what I used on that. So
okay. Number two, when you were talking about the weird news of the world and other places, I was waiting for you to tell the story that I posted a couple of days ago about, I believe it was in India, and the somebody had come up with the cure there for venomous snake bites to actually suck the venom out of the wound using a chicken's butt. I'm not lying.
What?
The guy went through about 74 chickens before he sucked all the poison out, and most of the chickens died. And in the article,
Did the people also die?
I don't know, but it said that, they first were using pigeons, I think ducks and chickens. And the last one, now I can't even believe this, how you're going to try and hold one of these still with its butt hole, basically. I don't know how your show is rated over the wound of the you know, the venomous snake bite, but the last one was a weasel. A weasel. How would you wrangle a weasel? I mean, you know, you, with one hand, you're going to have around its head to keep it from, you know, eating you.
Wow.
And the tail with the other hand. But what about the four legs with the, you know, sharp claws? What a... You know, what are you going to do about that?
Wow.
But I suggest you look into this, and maybe
I've got it up on screen right now. Like, okay. I'd love to say that.
Did you see the photograph? Did you see the photograph with the startled look on the chicken's face?
The one that I have up is just shows a chick. Let me scroll through. I don't see a picture of a chicken.
Okay. Well, go look on. Pull up my Facebook page, my personal page real quick, and just scroll down.
Okay.
Because the one I have has a coiled up snake, and then it's got like a close up in front of the snake of the chicken, and it's just the chicken's head, and it looks like, you know, it may be cartooned, but it looks like, you know, the rubber chicken face kind of making that face.
Yeah.
Which I can imagine if, you know, you were using a chicken's butthole to suck poison venom out of your wound.
You feel free to post articles like that on the Curious Realm group. I guarantee you there will be conversation had over those, my friend.
Well, okay. Well, you should make me an admin on there, and I will start sharing my news of the world.
Yeah, right? I am trying
to find
it.
Have you found it yet?
I have not found it yet. Was it before the death of Judy Tenuta? Because that was my horrifying news of the week. That one,
I don't know if it was before or after, but Yeah, well, I had personal, you know, in mine, I had the personal experience with her where I had the misfortune of sitting right next to the stage, and she pulled me on stage to do a little song and dance number with her in the 80s.
Yeah, you said that in your post, and I did find it. It was out of IFL Science, an old method of extracting snake yes. venom with chicken anuses.
You see the picture?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You need to screenshot that. Chicken. You or I would be as well.
That is, a meme image waiting to happen.
If somebody snucking, you know, sucking snake venom with my butthole, yeah. I would probably have a look even worse than that.
Wow.
You should screenshot that and broadcast that here on the show, though.
Oh, it was up on screen.
It was? Okay, great.
Yeah. Oh, most definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, because that, you know, it's hard. You need to go ahead and share that in the Facebook group.
I will. Because that's
an excellent story. Excellent story. Well, like I said, the choices were pigeon, duck, and then chicken. But where do you get weasel from?
Yeah. Like, I could see maybe a mongoose.
How do you go from chicken to weasel?
That's a jump, you know, like that's an actual species barrier, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, they're talking birds at first, you know, a pigeon, a duck, a chicken, and then weasel.
Yeah. Well, welcome back to the show, Craig. I love our conversations, man. So,
well, you know, it is a curious realm, isn't it?
It is. And there's all kinds of wild stuff out there. There really is. And that's half the reason that I post all those articles in that group is A, to spur conversation, B, to just show people, like, look at the crazy world that we live in, man. Technology-wise, everything. Like, within the last 2 years, like, scientists have created matter from light. Like, that's two steps away from replicator. Give me a cappuccino, you know?
Like, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
But like I said, I don't see how you can top chicken butthole venom extractor.
You can't. Unless you're talking Bigfoot.
Well,
I mean, yeah. An actual talking Bigfoot.
Is that the next step? Is that the next step if you're out of weasels to go ahead and grab a Bigfoot?
Well, they're protected now, at least in one state. So,
you know, that's just about as a logical step as from chicken to weasel. That's weasel to Bigfoot.
So. What was it that first brought you into the world of cryptozoology, man? Because it's an interesting place, and it's a very, very interesting community. I've had the great pleasure of visiting a lot of communities over the last year, and there really is nothing like the cryptid community.
Well. You know, I got interested as a kid. You know, I was into weird shit, and you know, cryptozoology falls under the heading of weird shit, I believe.
Pretty well.
And so, you know, I was into dinosaurs is all, you know, kids back in the 60s were, but you know, dinosaurs and just into weird stuff, you know, ghosts and UFOs and monsters. You know, I read all those eerie and creepy and, you know, all those, you know, and movie monsters, all those things as a kid. And you know, it gets my interest in cryptozoology itself got started with, you know, a creature that was seen by hundreds of people the summer of 1969 on the front page of the Four Star Telegram. July 10th and July 11th, you know, we're talking 10 days before man landed on the moon the first time.
Wow.
Or faked it in a movie studio, whatever your thought process is.
Sure.
But, you know, that was the front page story in the Fort Worth paper about this creature, the Lake Worth monster. And, So my grandparents knew I was into weird stuff, so they saved those newspapers for me. They lived in Fort Worth. I lived in the Dallas area. And so I was fascinated with that and, you know, found a book by a local lady about a month later that wrote a self-published book about it. And, you know, then I got a copy of John Keel's book, Strange Creatures from Time and Space, about a year later with awesome Frank Frazetta artwork on the cover. And then a couple of years after that, I saw The Legend of Boggy Creek in the theaters when it, you know, hit its nationally distributed run, you know, in 1973. It came out. As a matter of fact, just 2 months ago was the actual 50th anniversary of the premiere.
Yeah.
In Texarkana. And then the next night in Shreveport, August, I think 16th and 17th or 17th and 18th of 72. So, you know, it was just 2 months ago, the 50th anniversary of The Legend of Boggy Creek. Yep. And, you know, all those events combined to just set me on this path, you know, of weirdness.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting because when I first learned of you was in the days of Crypto Mundo.
I thought you were going to say when you were standing in line at the post office and you glanced over at the FBI's 10 most wanted poster, right? On the wall in there.
But it's, you know, that was really, and I guess it was probably an episode of Coast to Coast AM, something like that, when I was first introduced to CryptoMundo.com. And it was the beginnings of the internet. You know, it's nowhere near what the internet is now.
I mean, the site premiered, I believe it was September 27th, 2005. That a post of mine about, you know, the search for the ivory billed woodpecker, which, you know, there's different aspects of cryptozoology, you know, animals that are ethno-known and not known to science, but, you know, native populations know them, formerly extinct animals that are rediscovered. As well as, you know, the big ones, you know, Bigfoot, the Yeti, Loch Ness Monster, all those things. So there's, you know, it's a study of hidden or unknown animals. And, you know, some of those other things are lumped in with it, you know, the reemergence of a previously extinct animal. I mean, you know, Lauren Coleman's creature of choice for the International Cryptozoology Museum is the coelacanth, which was discovered 65 million years after it was thought to have been extinct.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, many different aspects of cryptozoology. It's not all just Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, one of them that I'm bringing up right now is the deer that was found with flaps on its nose.
Yeah, isn't that a muntjac or something like that?
Yeah, it was
Vietnamese.
Yep. And the, you know, naturalists had been in the jungles for years, stuff like that. And locals talked about it and they were like, okay, yeah, whatever. And sure enough, there it was.
Well, you know, before pre-1902, the mountain gorilla was, you know, the same thing. It was known to the natives, but it wasn't cataloged by science. It wasn't known to, you know, outside populations other than the natives until, I don't remember the gentleman's name, but, you know, actually shot and drug one out. I mean, you know, it was stories about a huge, hairy, man-like creature, you know, not that far unlike Bigfoot or Sasquatch. Known to the locals, but unknown to others. So, I mean, you know, there's still new animals being discovered, thousands and thousands of species every year. Now, the majority of them are fish, you know, or reptiles or amphibians or insects. But every now and then, you know, a good-sized mammal gets drug out into the light of day, and everybody is shocked that, you know, because science is, you know, pretty, you know, they're pretty arrogant as far as, you know, they know everything.
Well, sure. And I mean, there have been more than 500 species in 2021, as a matter of fact. 500 species were discovered, including beetles and all kinds of stuff. But that mm-hmm. is just the round number of what was found in 1 year. And that, hey, that was still a pandemic year, you know?
Yep.
So no telling
how many species got killed off by COVID that we didn't even get to discover before they were extinct.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm saying that sarcastic.
Well, sure. And even the fact that a recent fossil find is possibly what they might think is like the Loch Ness Monster, a long-necked reptile that lived in freshwater. You know, that's absolutely new. Here in the last year, we have had the discovery of Dragon Man, which was, you know, just talking about Bigfoot type of stuff. That was literally a human that was 7+ feet tall.
Yeah.
With the cranial size about twice the size of a normal person. So, like, these things existed.
Yep.
At one point. And, you know, we've had the conversation on the show. We've had the conversation privately. To me, it's especially whenever you're talking about indigenous populations around the world, many of whom their histories are oral and fairly well unbroken, that they still talk about them. And some of the American tribes talk about Sasquatch like they trade with them, they leave things for them, Sasquatch leaves things for them, you know, all kinds of stuff.
Right. You are correct, sir.
So, what was it that made you want to start actively doing events? Because events isn't really something that everybody necessarily excels at. You right. do a fantastic job, by the way.
Thank you, sir.
I have yet to not enjoy one of your events. But what was it that wanted you to, I guess, start bringing people together to begin with?
Well, you know, it's not that far removed from why I started, you know, co-founded a research organization. You know, I wasn't an outdoorsman. I wasn't a hunter. I wasn't a wildlife tracker. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a wildlife biologist. I wasn't any of those things. I was somebody that happened to have an experience that I couldn't explain away. And so decided to try and get answers. Like I said, I wasn't any of those things, but I had experience and expertise in organizing things. And so I organized an organization and built it, you know, with chess pieces that had skills that I did not have, you know, mm-hmm. from military, law enforcement, wildlife biologists, you know, scientists, trauma surgeons, you know, just wildlife trackers, people that had skills that could, you know, fill in the empty spots from, you know, because I didn't have those skills, but I assembled a team that had those skills. And so, you know, I attended a Bigfoot conference in Ohio, of all places, in 2000. And, you know, I was very fresh, you know, getting into the Bigfoot world, very fresh and telling about my experience. And I felt accepted and welcomed. And, you know, I thought, you know, there's nothing like this going on in Texas. I bet that I could do this. I bet I could put on a conference. And so I, you know, started planning. And after attending the first one, it was in April of 2000. And then I attended that event the next year in 2001, March or April, and I had already you know, put the wheels turning on my event, my first event, which ended up taking place on September 15th, 2001, which was 4 days after 9/11. And we had speakers like Lauren that were unable to fly in, but we had, you know, cast and crew of local people to Texas that were already scheduled to speak. Had an amazing gentleman who passed away a couple of years ago, Dr. John Vandernagel, who was a wildlife biologist that lived on Vancouver Island and had been looking into Sasquatch since, I believe, the late 60s, early 70s, and a degreed wildlife biologist. And he didn't fly, so he made like a 5-week road trip on the way down. We're talking, you know, getting on the ferry on Vancouver Island and taking the ferry over to the mainland and driving all the way down and stopping and interviewing Bigfoot witnesses the whole way down.
Incredible.
Just plotted his course. And so he was here and he spoke at the first two events. And then again in 2009, he spoke 2001, 2002 and 2009. And unfortunately, I believe it was 2018 when he passed away, but wow. He was the most humble, genuine person I've ever met in Bigfoot Sasquatch research. And wow. So the first year was a success. We had about 130 people that showed up 4 days after 9/11. And so we, you know, built from there, co-curated a couple of museum exhibits, including one with the University of Texas that I co-curated that, our organization participated with at the University of Texas, San Antonio. One of their campuses is a museum that was built for the 1968 World's Fair, the Institute of Texan Cultures. And we did a 2000 square foot Bigfoot exhibit that was titled Bigfoot in Texas? ? And it was very, very, very popular that summer. We also did 4 half-day conferences where we brought in people from all across the country to speak at this event, from Lauren Coleman to Jeff Meldrum to Jimmy Chilcutt to we brought Peter Byrne in. Was kind of a homecoming for him because his Tom Slick, a Texan who had funded the expeditions that Peter Byrne first did in the Himalayas in Nepal looking for the Yeti. Tom Slick brought him over to the Pacific Northwest to lead those expeditions in the early 60s. He was in Nepal in the late 50s looking for the Yeti. And we had at that event, which was really cool, Tom Slick's niece had written a biography of Tom Slick, and she did a book signing there. So we were able to put them, her and Peter Byrne, back together after many, many years. And like I said, it was very successful. So the conference last year was the 20th anniversary event. So I guess
Wow. This
year is the 21st annual event. So, you know, it's still going strong. Attendance is down this year. You know, we've got tickets available. If people are listening to this and interested in it, they can find the information on Facebook. You probably linked stuff.
Oh, yeah.
There are still tickets available. We've got a great lineup. We've got a great event planned, as always, with some cool information to be distributed. Chester Moore is bringing a young boy in that a disadvantaged boy to that we put together a package for him to be able to, he, you know, dreams about Bigfoot. He's going to come and we're going to present him with a bunch of Bigfoot related gifts and he's going to be there for the conference. And that's just one of the things that Chester Moore does with his he's got several organizations, Higher Calling and and the ones where I forget how many kids that they've gifted. My memory, it doesn't serve me right at the moment to remember what that's called, but you know, it's similar to the other organizations that, you know, take kids to Disneyland. Chester does, you know, wildlife events with these kids that, you know, have lost a parent or, you know, have a terminal illness or such. And so he's going to be bringing this young boy and you know, treating him to the conference. And, Chester will probably talk a little bit about what he does. So there's going to be all kinds of cool stuff. Cool. You know, there's Lyle Blackburn, a perennial at the conference.
Yep.
My best friend just wrote a book that I should have written years ago, but I'm a procrastinator and he's not. So he wrote the Texas Bigfoot book, but you know, I did write the foreword for it. So
you did.
He's going to be signing it. He's going to be signing and selling those. So, you know, if you're real nice and maybe slip me a five or so, I'll sign your copy of it as well if you buy one, since I wrote the foreword.
Okay.
But yeah. So there's going to be all kinds of cool stuff going on. We've got catered dinners. We got special presentations. We got, you know, just all kinds of cool stuff going on.
Yeah, it is. It is going to be a fantastic day of event, fantastic evening beforehand. And the gatherings, the side gatherings that happen afterward are always fantastic. Once again, an amazing community of people that you've really helped bring together to know that. And there, as someone who works in the event industry, it's not often outside of maybe a corporate event that you have a 20th anniversary, you know,
right.
Like even Lollapalooza didn't last for 20 years.
You know? I blame that on Perry Farrell.
I blame that on a lot of people, but yeah, to know that you have been fostering this community and bringing it together, researcher to individual for 20 years is absolutely amazing. And kudos to you, Craig, for doing so.
Well, thank you, sir. I enjoy doing it. I enjoy, putting on a, you know, an event that people have a good time. You know, you can't just have it like a scientific university lecture, because that's not going to draw a lot of interest. Just like,
yeah,
you know, yeah. Finding Bigfoot and Expedition Bigfoot aren't necessarily, you know, what Bigfoot research is really like, because if the TV shows would never exist, if it was about real Bigfoot research, because it'd be a bunch of people sitting around, you know, with audio gear listening for stuff to happen, you know,
yeah,
with nothing happening, yeah. Because the majority of it's not. So, you know, you gotta spice it up. You have to put in, you know, you have to tell, you know, have some eyewitness accounts in there, because people, you know, and it's in October, people want to hear scary stories and,
yeah,
you know, they want to hear the eyewitness accounts. They want to, you know, see people that's seen on TV and stuff like that.
Oh, sure,
you know,
sure.
You can't just have a very dry scientific lecture.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And
it's not going to appeal to the general public.
Yeah, and I'm a huge, as you can probably tell over my shoulder here, folks, I'm a big comic book fan, things like that, and been to Comic-Cons and pop culture conventions for years and years. And the one thing that I explained to people whenever we went to MUFON, this last year, my wife came with me and we overheard somebody as we were getting our vendor badges, and sponsor badges that, oh, this is no alien con. It's like, well, no, it's not. This is like right now they've got an 8-hour long field training going on for field investigators, man. Like this isn't go stand in line to get your picture taken with Giorgio Tsoukalos. No offense to Giorgio Tsoukalos. Amazing researcher, absolutely has turned a lot of spotlight to a field of research, most definitely. But How do you feel shows like that have impacted not only research, but I guess the public view of the research?
Well, it's definitely brought it forefront to the public. I mean,
sure.
You know, and kids love that stuff, you know. You hear stories about kids going out on their back porch at night and doing their Bigfoot calls and stuff. And you know, if you know, us old guys are dying off. You know, you got to have new blood. You got to bring new blood in it to continue the study, continue, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, these shows are not tailored to Bigfoot researchers because, first of all, there'd only be 5,000 people watching. And there'd be no advertising money, so there would be no show. I mean,
yeah.
It's got to appeal to a broad spectrum of people, especially kids. And that's what it does. And, you know, the Bigfoot researchers piss and moan about, oh, it's, you know, giving a bad reputation to Bigfoot research. Well, like I said, if it was real Bigfoot research, nobody would watch.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's definitely true, you know, because when it comes to research and everything else, like you're literally combing through 8 hours of footage from each camera, you know, things like that,
yeah.
Looking for something, sometimes a few frames at a time, not even watching it in real time, you know, watching it slightly slower. So, the down fingers in the dirt research is, you're right. For nerds like me, it's sexy. But for the average viewer, no, not at all.
Right.
You know, for someone like me, I could sit back and watch a channel all day long about how to patch synthesizers together, things like that. 3 minutes in, my wife's eyes would glaze over.
Right.
You know? So you've got to make it engaging. And yes, I think that, these shows have definitely, if anything, your Ancient Aliens, Expedition Bigfoot, Paranormal Files, what have you, they have definitely turned a light toward people's awareness of the topic and to possibly, not ridiculing so outright. So I think if anything, it's opened that channel of understanding with their fellow person who, whenever they bring it up, it's like, oh, you're a crazy bird.
Right.
Which is an important thing. You know, we have to make sure that we as people are open-minded enough to hear somebody's story, hear somebody's account, whether that involves Bigfoot coming out of a portal or Bigfoot coming and stealing the hot dogs from their picnic table at night, you know?
Sure.
Because until we find out, everything, you should try to throw everything at the wall and see what sticks, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the Brave Magellan style of science and granted, you know, I'm not saying go out and start building nuclear reactors in your garages, folks. Don't just throw it all to the wind. But when it comes to research, things like that, like even there are quite a few like nature grants, things like that and researchers who have turned to Bigfoot hunting communities, because of their number of trail cams that they have out in places that they aren't going, you know, stuff like that. So it's been interesting to see that cooperation between the scientific community and the Bigfooting and Sasquatching community over the last few years.
I agree. You know, there's, you know, like you said, it's got to be engaging to the general public.
Yeah,
it's got to be engaging to children because, you know, when all the old parts die off, you know, who's gonna continue on?
Well, and, you know, that is more important than a lot of people may realize, actually, Craig. Going around to a lot of these conferences, not just the conferences you have put on and other folks like the Southeast Texas Bigfoot. But going to the Remote Viewing Association, going to the Near Death Studies Conference, and a couple of others, the people that run these things, the people that are in charge of them, are literally just under the first rung of people doing the research, you know, so they're getting on up in years. And when you look around the room, there aren't a whole lot of like early mid 30 folks bopping around. You know, there's a lot more at that I've noticed at the paranormal conventions and the cryptid conventions than there are at like the Remote Viewing Association, things like that. But to bring the younger generation in is what we need to be able to sustain the research for a long period of time. Because, yeah, I mean, I think right now is really, even though there's been research going on for decades now.
Right.
I don't think it's to the extent cooperatively that it is now. And I don't think that there have been scientists of open mind, let's say, until now. And we have some, you know, there's been some great work done out there. And even, I'm trying to remember the scientist that studies all the footprints, that is like, no, this is a real thing. And we need to look into it. So, it's nice to see that happening now. And it's taken decades for it to get to that point. And much like any science, it takes decades to get anywhere with it. So, we'll see what happens. I am excited for the future and where we're going with things, where even technology is bringing us, even drone technology, things like that. Because once again, most of those sightings, at least here in North America, there's quite a few in the big thicket region, things like that here, but the majority of them hover up around that big, dark, deep spot that you look at in a night map of the United States, you know?
Sure.
So the fact that, there aren't really people going there makes a big difference. So I hold out the fact that, yes, I believe that there is a large hominid species. There is too much anecdotal evidence for it. Whether or not we will find evidence, whether or not evidence will be accepted, that's a different story.
Yes. But
yeah, I want to thank you for coming on tonight, Craig. It's always a pleasure talking with you. Before we let you go, one last chance for shameless self-promotion. Let everybody know where they can go to follow the Texas Bigfoot Conference, where they can go to buy their tickets. I've got the Eventbrite up on screen right now. Go ahead and give it to them, my friend.
Well, all that information can be found on Facebook, and like I said, Chris here is linking to it. But I do have a couple of other cool events coming up very soon. Not only
absolutely
coming up this weekend, but in 5 weeks from the Texas Bigfoot Conference, I've got the first one I've done, but the Texas UFO Convention that's going to be also here in Jefferson. This year, we're going to be focusing on nothing but Texas UFO crash cases, UFO sighting cases, alien encounter cases, all from Texas. So we've got headlining Nick Redfern, famed ufologist. You've seen him on Ancient Aliens, right next to Giorgio, as a matter of fact. Giorgio's got a lot of hair. Nick has none.
The antithesis. But,
yes, that's right. The anti-Giorgio. That event's coming up November 19th. That's the Saturday before Thanksgiving. And then I'm imploring attendees to dress up like their favorite alien. You know, illegal or otherwise. I don't care. Just dress up like an alien. Did that one fly over your head, Chris?
No. I'm laughing. Believe me.
Oh, okay. Okay. See, there now you sound like, what's his name? That cartoon dog. Muttley.
Yeah, right.
And then in December, on December 10th, so, you know, then we're like, holy crap, that's 3 weeks away.
I know.
Three weeks away from the UFO convention is the Texas Bigfoot Film Festival.
You gotta space these things out.
I'm telling you, we're gonna be screening seven Bigfoot films. Seven films, that's right.
Wow.
On one day, on one screen. So, everything from G-rated to the adult portion, maybe even bordering on NC-17.
Oh.
But seven Bigfoot films, and with a lot of the directors, producers, studios, involvement, and participation. But it's going to be in Marshall, Texas, about 20 minutes from Jefferson, which Jefferson is the Bigfoot capital of Texas.
That is true.
Marshall has an awesome theater there to screen these films.
Awesome.
And that's also on Facebook, the Texas UFO Con, the Bigfoot Film Festival. And then coming up in April of 2023, we have the Falcon Monster Festival already rolling back. I tell you, Chris, it's going to be here before you know it.
It seems like we
were just there.
I was literally wearing the shirt yesterday, and I was like, man, dang, that feels like it was just a couple of weeks ago. Like, yeah, it is literally flown by. So make sure to go out and buy your tickets, folks, because these are going to be some amazing events. I cannot wait until this weekend to come out to my first trip to Jefferson. So I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait. Thank you so much again, Craig, for always coming on.
No problem, Chris. Looking forward to seeing you on Friday. That's only, what, 3 days away?
I know. It's right around the corner, bud. So we'll see you soon.
Okay, sir. Take care.
All right. Take care. Man, always a great conversation with Craig. While you are online checking out everything from Texas UFO Con, Texas Bigfoot Film Festival, as well as the Falk Monster Festival and Texas Bigfoot Conference, which is this weekend, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm, folks. Curious Realm is where you can find all the episodes. That is where you can find your share your story. That is where you can go and find the Knowledge Vault, all kinds of fun stuff. We will be right back after these commercial messages with our good friend Daniel Allen Jones from the Vortex, talking about the paranormal experiences and his experience this last weekend at Haunted Hill House in Mineral Well, Texas. Right after this, folks. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spagyric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots, every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today and let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation and workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training, and use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website again is PodcastCadet.com. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at curiousrealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store. Hello, everybody, and welcome back from our commercial break. Thank you so much to our amazing sponsors, especially our sponsor and guest, Dr. Kimberly McGeorge from The Secret of Everything. She is your number one source for alternative health, healing, and consciousness exercises. Stop on by and check her out. She actually did an aura reading on me before her first appearance a couple years ago. And, man, I'm here to tell you, it was probably the most accurate, reading I've ever had as far as just a cold reading being done. So stop on by, check her out, support her at thesecretofeverything.com. Also, of course, thank you to our streaming hosts, WebWorks Wireless. They are your source for high-speed internet for all No data caps, no throttling, and no credit checks. I'm here to tell you folks, I put up about 20 gigs a month through WebWorks Wireless, and I have yet to have a problem. I have been benchmarking them across the country as I do live events. And speaking of live events, our good friend from the Texas Bigfoot Film, or I guess the Texas Bigfoot Roadshow, Falk Monster Festival, all kinds of stuff. Our good friend, Daniel Allen Jones is joining us. Welcome, Daniel. How are you doing today?
Hey, Chris. Doing all right. It's good to be back here with you and everyone tuning in. It's always a good time. You know, things have just been a whirlwind lately and have been at a few events here and there over the last several weeks, but I'm trying to get caught up on sharing about some of those things. And so I just recently got back from a pretty interesting actual paranormal type of event, which is kind of you know, something I haven't been a lot involved with, but I thought it'd be cool to kind of mix things up.
Yeah.
Right. So it actually was a bit of a crossover and had a really great time here at this place called Haunted Hill House, which we can get into a little bit too. But yeah, you know, the as you mentioned, that, you know, the Texas Bigfoot Conference that's coming up, and I'm really looking forward to that. So we've got quite a few things we can kind of get into this evening.
Well, let's definitely get into the Hill House real quick, because not a lot of people are familiar with that. Not a lot of people are familiar with the property and the fact that it's even there. Whenever I saw that you were doing a presentation, I was a little disappointed. That was over the time that we were moving and everything else, so I didn't get to make it up. But how did that go? Tell us a little bit about the property, the history, and the mystery behind the place.
Sure. So it's got a lot of strange history to it. And apparently there's a lot of active energy and in the area regarding some kind of paranormal phenomena and a lot of unexplained things that happens when people go and do these investigations, as many shows have gone and actually tried to capture some evidence of. And so it's been featured on a number of different television shows and you know, paranormal shows, things like this. But the Haunted Hill House itself has really been it's in Mineral Wells. It's been sort of a place where a lot of strange things have occurred since about the 50s, where it had connections with the Baker Hotel. And a lot of the people who were involved were doing some underground work and kind of shady business with a brothel. And a lot of the ladies that stayed there were not in the best condition, and they were not treated very well. And a lot of them ended up having kids that were taken or had some really traumatic things going on. So that plays a big part into the history, the apparent activity that people describe. And so this house has two stories, you know, I've got a downstairs and an upstairs, and I'd say probably some weird crawl spaces, attics, and maybe even underground tunnels. It seems to connect in some way, maybe even to the Baker Motel. So I first really heard about it, I guess, a few years back, and it's been featured through media and things, but I hadn't really ever been and really kept up too much with it. And sure, as I mentioned, you know, I am interested in the unexplained and paranormal things, but, and I have a lot of friends who are into paranormal investigations, and I think it's all very yep. fascinating, but it's probably one of those areas I haven't done a whole lot of field work in and field investigations in. So I figured not only would it be really cool to finally get a chance to come out to a really historic type of place, but a few friends of mine have been involved with this location for a number of years. And this would be Teal Gray and Martha Hazard Decker and a number of other people who have gone and written about the history and been a part of this whole, place for a while and bringing teens in. So the owners and caretakers are, some of the ones who basically, you know, invite people, let people rent it out and basically have them come and see what they can experience over the night. And so, yeah, throughout the 50s and kind of coming up to the modern era, it had a lot of traumatic events. It seems to be inhabited by the spirits of the ladies, and maybe some of their children. And wow. possibly even more than just, deceased people. Some seem to think that maybe there are entities there as well that are not human, and that it could actually have some, what some people say is demonic presence. So pretty creepy stuff going on. A lot of strange activity in history, a lot of historic and antique objects, artifacts, things like that they've collected to kind of bring in. And I think that adds a little bit of concentration to the energy there. So sure. pretty bizarre type of setting, but all of the different rooms in the Haunted Hill House have a different theme. And, so people can come in and choose to stay in different rooms.
Oh, wow.
You've got all kinds of places to go in and kind of, check out and look at, but, each room has a camera set up, and in the one of the areas they go in, and you can kind of monitor what's going on, see if you can watch your teammates or see the activity happening. And
yeah,
there are many dolls. There are dolls, like antique dolls, all over the house. And it's very decorative. It looks really cool, pretty creepy, but some of these dolls are historic and have some kind of attachments or have done something like levitate, and some of them they leave notes and little bits of information next to some of these artifacts. And there's a lot of trauma there with some of the people who've lived there or experienced something with their child being taken. And so the people who ran the business weren't really very good to these ladies, and they would take their children and sell them off or do something to them, and who knows really what's going on there. But apparently, yeah, you can tell there's a lot of really challenging issues happening that really get imprinted into that location. So when people go in, they sense out these things. There are a number of different ways and methods that people try to find, evidence, or try to get an impression about what they feel, what they're tuning into, and, the sensations they get. So people come in as a sort of intuitive or even a medium, and really just trying to feel out what's going on, where some people, they'll use tech and all the gear. You'll have microphones and cameras and all of that too. So you kind of have the whole gamut of different things to try to use when you're going into a place like this. And so what we had was an event last Saturday into the following day where a number of people showed up, which is kind of not something that really goes on a whole lot. I mean, they do have people who rent out with teams, but we had probably about 30 people show up for this event where Teal had said to me a few weeks back, let's put something together where we're going to bring in, people to do a paranormal investigation overnight. But not only that, the owners are really interested in doing something with UFOs as well, because they've had some interesting sightings, because it's connected to a property there, which is part of this place, East Mountain. And they have a lot of different interesting lore and history there. A lot of UFO sightings, apparently. And again, this is in Mineral Wells, Texas.
Yeah.
So this place with East Mountain is interesting because there's this whole treasure story of hidden treasure that has tried to be found, over the years. And so there's always some kind of strange connections between something like hidden treasure and strange activity and UFOs. It's always fascinating to see what types of connections can be made with this sort of stuff. But they said that it would be interesting to have something like a UFO talk as well as a Skywatch. So Teal Gray, sure, invited me to come out and give a talk on Texas UFO mysteries, which, as you and many of the people who follow along with the Vortex and are tuning in here with Curious Realm know, I'm really interested in the UFO subject and a lot of the different things that, kind of entails also. So, talking about UFOs is really cool. And we got to do that for the very first time, as well as the Skywatch. And so some of the other people came out and kind of implemented some different methods of trying to initiate contact. And so we talked about some of the similarities between what people are doing when they're trying to commune with disembodied spirits, as well as trying to make contact with what we think are non-humans, whether we think of them as aliens or extraterrestrials or some kind of being beyond this dimension, or maybe a part of it sometimes whenever they want.
No.
And how maybe we can try to establish contact through different things. There's a lot of crossover, sure, between what people in the paranormal circle are doing, and then also in sort of ufology as well. So we did that for the first time.
Wow. And that's awesome. And, it's interesting because when I went to the Institute for Near-Death Studies, the International Association of Near-Death Studies Conference that was being co-sponsored by Robert Bigelow and his, I guess it was, I'm trying to remember what it was, specifically the BICS. It was BICS.
Right.
Bigelow Institute for Consciousness Studies. And they were giving out actual, they're going through the grant processes right now and taking applications from people for communication with the other side and verified communication with the other side. In more than one location, in more than one instance, specifically when Robert Bigelow owned Skinwalker Ranch, they had numerous stories of portals appearing, things coming through them, all kinds of stuff. So when you're talking about certain locations, even somewhere like Haunted Hill House, you know, I am a huge believer in the magical concept of the egregore, and that is something that is created by a mass consciousness. And whether that thins the veil between places because so many people go there expecting and believing and everything else, or is it a situation like the Marfa lights where things have gone on there for at least 100-something years, you know, like before there were automobiles and stuff like that. So like you said, the similarity of these things, even to go to the remote viewing conference and see that everybody involved with the founding of the science, and it is a repeatable science, the science of remote viewing, every single founder of that science, other than Ingo Swann, who was a practitioner in one of the lab studies, things like that. But all the people that studied him and the science of it, all like particle physicists, you know. So even now with all the UAP stuff, Daniel, there is such a crossover and such, I guess not even a crossover, but a commingling of the sciences. And one of the things that I have tried to advocate is that we have to be really careful as those of us going out doing this kind of stuff. We need to be very, very thorough with the evidence that we gather, and not get swept up in hysteria. And that's hard.
Right. I do think that there are a lot of challenges when it comes to trying to make sense of any of these types of issues, which, you know, for so long, people in the scientific community have not been able to really look at in a very serious way. And for the public, it's almost just relegated to fantasy and science fiction and the movies, you know, and pop culture. And of course, it will always be that way. But I think it could be brought out of the fringes and into the forefront of serious scientific thought and discussion. And just like you said, it's really cool to see how there are incentives now for people to take this seriously and try to figure out what's going on through something like these grants, which, like you said, Bigelow has offered through BICS, which I think is really cool. I followed along with that. I was really glad to see you were able to go to that event.
Oh, and, it was fun.
And, you know, it's something that I didn't get to make myself, but like you said, you know, sometimes things in life, you know, kind of carry you in certain directions, but I hope to make it out there someday. And I had some buddies that were also a part of it. Trisha Barker, who's a local here in my area, has been part of that event for a long time too. And it's really great to see, I think, the camaraderie, the inclusion, you know, the inclusiveness of what people have to offer with certain things when it comes to the unexplained. And I think with someone like Robert Bigelow's ability to help provide resources to further this and by way of, you know, developing our understanding of what can be done scientifically, like you said, I think there's a lot of potential. So it's exciting to see that this is really being taken a little bit more seriously, and the possibility that these things have been well known, or at least have been known about, maybe not very well, but have been at least able to make a mark in our history and in our traditions and things that help us kind of keep track of whatever's been going on here in this strange world we live in. And so that's why I think it was really interesting to me to be able to go out and find something you know, on these topics to be a part of. And so I was grateful to be able to come out through Teal Gray inviting me to be a part of this event that she put together with a number of other people who were there. You have Henry Moss and his wife, Nancy, and you had Susan Hill, and a number of other people who had been a part of the different functions there before, but were offering their guidance through the house. And so we had a great time during the discussion of UFO history in Texas, as well as during the Skywatch. You know, it was really pretty clear. I'm not sure that anyone had major types of experiences or sightings out there, but pretty quick it got to a point where the whole sky was covered in clouds. But, you know, it allowed us to shift our focus to come inside and continue on in there. And so that's, I think, where people really had some interesting things going on. And to me, I think it really is, again, a very interesting way of looking at how we interpret a lot of this type of phenomena culturally or through a different lens of perception when it comes to language or understanding, you know, whether we call it paranormal, whether we call it spirits, whatever is going on. I do think that there are ways that people have tried, and there's a lot of correlation between these different methods. And so it had my attention, and I was really grateful to take part. And, you know, fortunately, this time anyway, I don't think I really had anything very sinister happen. It was actually rather peaceful. But we were all very eager to, you know, to allow for something. So, this, you know, I'm open to,
did you have a bad experience in the past?
Oh, no, I just mean in the event that I get to go back, you know, I'm looking forward to maybe seeing what might be in store for an additional experience. But we were all, you know, I was well, I should say again, you know, we had a pretty good sized group of about 30 people overall. It was a private type of event, so it was a little bit more exclusive to, you know, people who could, because, you know, to keep in mind, with all the conferences and types of events like that that we do, these are pretty large scale types of things. With this one, it was a little bit more tight knit, so we had to limit it. But all of the people who got to come in and kind of search around the house ended up, I think, having a good time. And so once everyone had to leave after the event was over, there were a handful of us, about half a dozen people left over, including myself, which were actually staying the night there. And I was the only one out of those few who had never been there before, and everyone else had plenty of time there and previous, and you know,
what was your, was your experience despite nothing happening? What was the place like? What was your overall feeling while you were there? Not just were there spooks, specters and ghosts, but do you have feelings of dread in your basement or attic? You know,
right. Well, you know, I'll put it this way. I don't know that I would say nothing happened, but I would just say that it seems that anything that happened, it all ended up being a good experience and ended up being peaceful, I think, overall. Nothing that made me leave with a bad impression to where I would never want to come back. Like, maybe some people felt that way at one point, but I felt pretty comfortable going through each room and looking at some of the different artifacts and really just trying to sit and settle in the space and tap into the energy. And a few friends of mine who were also there felt like they connected with some of the different things that were going on that made them feel different emotions that they weren't really experiencing themselves, but they were kind of tapping into also. And I thought that that was kind of curious because there, again, there's a lot of trauma, there's a lot of aggression, a lot of oppression. You know, a lot of these women were kept there against their will, their children were taken.
Wow.
And that's all very unfortunate. And so some of the kids who were there apparently, you know, sort of have lingering energy, sometimes playful, and sometimes the sinister energy seems to be indicative of something a little bit more nefarious. So that was curious to me because I was interested in the history. And so talking to Teal and Martha, these are people who have kind of researched this for a long time, and they described that not only are the children active and playful, a little bit nicer in nature, according to some of the other, you know, experiences people have, but the more sinister things that have happened, which are things along the lines of people having objects thrown at them, people being dragged off beds, things like this, that really seems to fall more into an issue dealing with some of the sinister energies, possibly even the demonic presence that's there. And I find this interesting because they said that there's a demonic entity they refer to as Toby, At first, I thought this was a little comical, considering, you know, of all the demon names and all the different, you know, forms of literature out there and histories, that Toby the demon was the one who's inhabiting Hill House. But it was sort of a, you know, a modernized handle for who they refer to as Asmodeus. And I thought this was really interesting because they were talking about how Toby is a pretty dark spirit, and does some pretty harsh things, and people will leave with scratches and rashes and feeling burned or something. And so it's not always very nice. So I'm just fortunate that we walked away relatively unscathed. So there's that. But, you know, they talked about each room with a different theme has had a history of things happening. And so some of these rooms where some of the ladies would be trapped in would say, the spiritual energy of this room does not favor men. It does not like masculine presence. So that would be a room where I don't mind kind of looking around, but I probably wouldn't want to stay in for too long. So I, you know, got to kind of look at some of the things and go through and say, all right, I'll continue on. Not trying to rile things up, but let's respect what he is, you know, and just keep that in mind. So
that is an absolute truth, you know, even going into it. Once again, I used to do some paranormal investigation back in the day, and it's hard to go into a location where you know that there has been activity or that you've heard that there's been activity as a blank slate. You know, it's almost going into court having heard about the case. And it can be really hard to stay objective whenever you start gathering photographs and videos and audio and stuff like that. So, but to know that the instances at Hill House have been happening for how long overall?
Well, it seems like a lot of the women that were part of this brothel and their children being taken, this all seems to have been going on at least as far back as the '50s, and possibly even way earlier than that with some of the connections, because at least it's known that it connects with the Baker Hotel and all this stuff, maybe with an underground tunnel. But a lot of the illegal activities that might have been going on could have stemmed from other more nefarious things, as far as, you know, again, just people knowing the area had sort of this weird East Mountain with the treasure and, you know, keeping things under wraps as far as the locations and using it as a safe house to, you know, kind of be off the radar from any legal business. And I think that that's where a lot of the more sinister activity, not even just spiritually or however you might think, just sort of in dealing with what people come there to do, you know, or used to, right? So being that has such a residual effect, it might have an imprint on the feeling that people go in regardless of the spirits. You're just in a place that is old. It's very antique. It has a lot of, restoration over the years, but there are still parts of it that are from the original build, the framework and things that, you know, really add to the history of the overall, location. But one of the things that caught my attention was that you have these different themed rooms. You have the axe room, which is where apparently there's some really traumatic things going on with, this idea that people had, unfortunately had this guy who came and was not a very nice guy, but basically would carelessly do away with people and became sort of a murderer and sought out his time there and used things like, you know, saws and really pretty gory stuff. So that's a big imprint on the trauma, I think, experience. There was a tub where someone had committed suicide. One of the ladies, unfortunately, just couldn't handle it and decided to, you know, set her own departure off. And, you know, so some of these things are a very traumatic part of a location. There's also this carousel room where some of the children would go. And they say that if you stay in there, that sometimes people describe waking up with children jumping on the bed, you know, in a playful, I guess, way, but they have dolls all around, hanging dolls up and just everywhere. And so little crawl spaces and attic ways that children were locked in. And so we went around, and I mentioned earlier, sometimes people try to use different types of gear and tech and stuff. So we went around and sensed what we could kind of naturally, but also I was going around, you know, capturing as much as I could with video. And then also we used a parabolic mic. We had a ghost box going off. Some people were using some apps to try to see if anything would come through. We had some night vision and really just trying to use a variety of techniques to see what we could figure out, if there's anything that we might be able to, say, you know, adds credence to a lot of the different things and claims that have been made. So one of the interesting things, and I'll kind of come back, because I wouldn't say that nothing happened, because at least the probably most notable thing that happened was while we were interacting with the ghost box. And for those who aren't too familiar, a ghost box is a device that cycles through radio stations or other types of AM stations or FM stations, if it can, to go and make a pattern that allows for a spirit or some kind of discarnate entity to be able to communicate. And we technically shouldn't be able to have something that you would hear talk through it. Like if you got to a radio station, it'll almost so quickly be onto the next station that you wouldn't really hear a full sentence.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be able to technically, but sometimes something will come through and you think, wow, how did that even happen? And so you can ask, sort of not necessarily ask the ghost box itself, but you can ask the general area or the potential entities or spirits there, and it can use that as a sort of way apparently to communicate. And so the ghost box was nearby, a little remote for what seems to be an LED light. So it's one of those small little remotes with a bunch of color buttons on it, so you can press it to choose which color you might like your lights to be on. And I noticed that it didn't change any lights, because I guess it was out of batteries or wasn't plugged in or it wasn't working. But we used this as a sort of a demonstration, a way to kind of see, all right, we would ask, what color? Which color would you like? And then very plainly out of the ghost box, it said red. You know, so I thought that was really interesting. And then again, over and over, it would say red. And again, this is cycling through radio stations. It's not supposed to really give you one station for more than a half a second, half of a half of a second, maybe, right? So, you know, for it to come very plainly saying red, and of course I press red, but, you know, nothing actually works as far as the lights changing or turning on. So a moment later, something falls onto the ground, and I thought maybe did I kick something? And I'm looking around, what happened just now? And another guy who was in the room next to us peeks out from the entryway. He says, did you just throw something? Did you guys throw something? And we were all standing there just thinking, no, like we thought maybe that came from your side. And they said, no, it turned out to be batteries. So whether they fell on there somehow or they were thrown by something, I just think it was interesting, because I didn't consider this until later that remote wasn't working. And maybe they thought, it needs batteries, you idiot.
Yeah.
So maybe they threw the batteries at us to try to actually get it to work. I don't know, but having the ghost box is always kind of fun. And then the apps where people can try to ask questions and allow it to communicate as well. Parabolic mics are interesting because of, as you know, dealing with audio equipment, it picks up very sensitive, low levels of audio. And so it's something that helps out to hear some of the subtle sounds. But sometimes people say you can hear the subtle conversations or voices.
Yeah.
When you're really tuned into the parabolic microphones. Night vision, obviously, you can kind of see things that you wouldn't normally get to, especially if you're in the darkness. And so at the times when it was just a few of us left after everyone had already gone after the event, we were in total darkness. All the lights were off in the whole building, and we were just kind of sitting in different sections. And they told me, well, since I'm the only one who hasn't been there before, it's sort of a rite of passage at the Haunted Hill House to go and sit in what they call the portal. The portal is a small closet crawl space under the stairway that has a chair with a strange doll behind it that had a note on it, with two mirrors on each side of the wall of the crawl space, on your right and your left of the chair. So it's a little disorienting. And so I decided to muster up the courage and go in there. And sit in there for a few minutes and in front of that doll, because the chair's facing the doorway, which you came in. It's a very small, tight, confined space. So anyone who's claustrophobic probably wouldn't like being in there, but, you know, it is one of those things where you wonder, what is this portal doing? You know, is this what the entities are coming from? And is this something that has already been here, or was it brought here? Did someone try to open something up? And so a lot of strange things, with what's going on in that house, but we had a pretty good time overall. I don't think anyone felt like they had anything very traumatic happen. We did have that set of batteries thrown onto the ground, which was interesting. You know, some people might chalk that up to maybe they just rolled off of something, and I don't really know. No one really saw that. It's kind of in the dark, but I'd like to think that hopefully someone threw something, those batteries at us. So, really interesting. But after everything else, staying up until about 5 a.m, just before the sun starts coming up, we all decided to sort of turn in, and I retired. I had to kind of choose a room of the few that were left. And I decided, well, it's either the carousel room, which is the one with all the dolls hanging around and has this hidden tunnel and where the children jump on the bed. And I thought, well, I don't know that I'd want to have to be bothered by a bunch of kids jumping on the bed if I'm trying to get a few hours of rest. So I thought, you know what? Let's just crank it up a notch, and I'll go stay in what they call the Shadow Man room.
Yeah.
So I stayed in the Shadow Man room.
All right. Any Shadow Man?
Well, you know, I don't recall seeing any strange shadowy figures, but I forgot that by the time I chose that room, that was the room that I look over that had the bathroom, and there's a panel above the bathroom that says suicide room. And I thought, wow, I totally forgot that this was also the room with the bathtub with the, unfortunately, the lady. So I thought, well, I just figured I don't know that it makes much sense to try to change things up now. I'm just going to settle in, really take it all in. They said the closet is also a portal. If you open it, it'll open for spirits to come through. So, you know, I had to do that. I opened up the closet. I opened up the bathroom. I looked around. They had some creepy dolls that said that they were from different places, that they had entity attachments, and some of them had levitated. So I greeted all of them. It might sound a bit funny, but I would go around to each of the dolls and say, hi, nice to meet you. And I'd shake their little doll hand. And I think, the funny thing is my friend later on, she said, you know, it's probably good that you did that because otherwise it might not have turned out so well. But I actually, despite having stayed up for so long and been up into the early hours, I had a peaceful few hours of rest there in the Shadow Man room. And, you know, it was a pretty good time. I don't really remember any bad dreams, and I didn't really see any shadow figures or a shadow man or the hat man or anything like that. So some people describe having seen a tall, 8-foot tall, dark mass. And that sounds terrifying to some people. And I guess I'm fortunate that I missed out on that.
As somebody who has had their shadow figure experience with one at the end of their bed, touching them, it is more than terrifying, man. That was one of my first experiences with night terror, and man, boy, is it visceral. Have you ever had an experience of a paranormal nature, so to speak, Daniel, in that way?
Well, you know, I think that one of the challenges we also face is that paranormal is such a big umbrella term, like UFO. Now it's something that, you know, so many things can fall under that. And I would say that because of that, sometimes ambiguity, that for sure, yes, I would say that I have experienced a lot of strange things. I don't really use a lot of my own personal experiences as a platform, but it has served as a springboard of my interest and involvement into all of these things. But I have experienced sleep paralysis. I have seen shadowy figures through states of sleep paralysis. And I found that the best way at some of those times I could try to figure out or understand the best of my ability was that the body was kind of going, or, you know, when we maybe go through a sleep paralysis or have like a sleep terror, night terror type thing, that maybe the body is kind of going through a one of those, like a computer has a blue screen of death. It just can't comprehend what's going on. It fails.
Oh, yeah.
System error. And I think that our consciousness exists beyond that, and that maybe we still perceive and are aware through that consciousness, but our body has no way to fully comprehend what's taking place and sort of shuts down. It freezes. We're petrified, and we sometimes can't move
yeah.
when we're in sleep paralysis, but we can still be aware. And that sounds really frightening. And unfortunately, it's something that has an effect on people and their ability to perceive something that, you know, does give them this trauma as well.
Yeah.
That's where people describe these types of things like a shadow man or the hat man, or just strange entities, sometimes sinister and sometimes peaceful as well.
Oh,
sometimes
absolutely.
People say they can move. So sometimes I think it's a little bit more than sleep paralysis. But I would say outside of that, I feel like things that also kind of tangentially fall into the paranormal, I would say that, you know, sometimes we think of parapsychology as connecting with the paranormal. I've had a few strange poltergeist type effects happen around me with electronics and things, and things, objects moving sometimes in a way that I kind of wondered, really questioning, is there any other way that something could have made this happen or move? Because, you know, I want to make sure I'm not just easily, you know, just kind of taking it at face value. I want to make sure that there are other ways we can really try to see if there's something to it, and not just completely be dissuaded and say, oh, it's there's nothing. It's and be, you know, dismissive, but
yeah.
to think, okay, are there ways that this can be done? So I try to be open-minded, but I try to have a healthy degree of skepticism, but not be disregarding or just blatantly disbelieving just because of whatever. So I think that some of those types of things and having these types of interactions and experiences, when I was younger helped to open me up to the possibility that maybe there is a lot of crossover. Maybe there are some connections between these people describing entities from other worlds or other dimensions or communing with the spirits of those who have passed or spirits who don't seem to be regular types of people and have some kind of special qualities and, you know, from different realms. And I think that makes us wonder about all the different ways, the modalities of contact that we can have through UFO type experiences,
well,
through paranormal experiences and near death experiences or psychedelic experiences, you know, and so I'm curious about all of these things. I'm fascinated by it. And so that's where I think that, like you said earlier, when we find that there are people who are interested in doing the research and helping to provide for more development, I think that's going to help bridge the gap between some of these challenges we face in both paranormal and ufology and all of this. So
yeah.
So I'm excited to see kind of what connections can be made and where we can go.
We've definitely had, as Art Bell would say, a quickening when it comes to people's want for these topics and people's open mind for these topics. There are now entire channels of cable television devoted to this stuff. So it's pretty phenomenal to have seen it in our lifetimes go from the world of Weekly World News and other tabloids and things like that and relegated to things like Project Blue Book and other black bag stuff from back in the day, you know, to an open conversation between science and government and researchers. It's been pretty incredible to see that come about over the last few years. So I am utterly thrilled with what's going on, but at the same time, I'm wary. You know, it's kind of like I would love to have Stephen Greer on to talk about CE5 and the protocols and doing that. Like, I've got the CE5 app. I've never been to a meeting, but it's also one of those, like, I don't mind recording for EVP, but going around a supposed haunted location and attempting to have a conversation, I think could be a dangerous place to be, you know? You could be possibly very easily deceived by something that is other. all kinds of stuff. So I don't know. I don't know. Where do you fall in the communication with the other side? Are you a passive or an active?
Well, I think that it's one of those things where I'm really interested in the ways in which we can establish a consistent interface, because it seems like that's a big challenge across the board, whether it's sure. paranormal, whether it's what some, like you mentioned, Greer's CE5. And we did bring this up during our Skywatch and kind of the mix of that with what others refer to as HICE, human initiated contact with extraterrestrials. And I think that it's, again, what CE5 implies, close encounters of the fifth kind. We talked about the Hynek scale. You know, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, the civilian astronomer who worked with, as you mentioned, Project Blue Book, was someone who came up with this scale to describe close encounters. Sometimes people just see an object in the sky. Sometimes it comes down. Sometimes they see a being or an occupant in relation to it. Sometimes that object or that being affects that person. So CE5 was added. Because most people know the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, well, there's also a really strange and intriguing movie called The Fourth Kind, which kind of implies that, the CE4. And then, of course, now it's been added and popularized later on by Greer, who discusses how we can do different things naturally through meditative approaches, through trying to sort of do syncing of the hemispheres, you know, some people call hemisync, and using a few different wavelengths and sound effects and things to try to use our own intention collectively as a group, or maybe even individually if we can, to allow for a space to be afforded to both us and the recipient to have a medium of contact, whether it's visual or audible. That to me is so interesting, just to see the correlations between that and what people are doing in the paranormal community by way of investigating these locations with supposed haunted activity or just any type of paranormal activity, because they're using similar techniques, maybe not exactly the same, but they're trying to establish something consistent. And that's the challenge, is sometimes we get one thing one time, and we might be at a place several times, and it might only happen once or maybe never, or maybe a handful of times, or some people describe it happens all the time. So I think that there are certain things that we can try to do to help strengthen that consistency of contact or communication. If we are going to try to do it actively, if we're going out of our way to initiate that, as Heist suggests, human initiated, CE5 is where humans are going out of their way. It's not where something just inadvertently happens to humans. It's not where we're just, oh, look, there's something up there. You know, we're trying to call them down. We're trying to bring them into the space. We're trying to see if we can establish a medium through which we can all commune with something beyond. That sounds just like what a lot of paranormal investigators try to conjure up in these types of haunted locations. And I think that there could be some relation and connections. You know, if we connect the dots, maybe there's something that we've kind of overlooked, and that these communities do have a lot of crossover in what they're doing by using techniques. So, and as I've mentioned before, in some of the past shows we've done, I'm really interested in a lot of this by way of cultural anthropology and by studying many of these different communities to see what types of things they do, not just to communicate, the types of tools they use, their approaches that they have, the practices, you know, their rights, all of these things, and to participate as one of them, you know, in many of these different groups to really get a better understanding. So to me, this is all part of that experience in my, you know, research into all of these things. And so, like I said earlier, I've focused a lot more on some of these other types of areas, ufology, cryptozoology, archaeology, and history. Consciousness to me has always been, you know, a fascinating topic in how we understand different events. So to really dive into a location with some significantly historic paranormal activity and has been featured on a number of shows, I think having gone and spent the night over at Haunted Hill House was a pretty great experience. It was phenomenal, to say the least. And I'd love to go back and see if, you know, anything else might come up.
I once again love the shows that are out there, but have to call into question just what how much of it is sensationalism and how much of it is actual research, you know?
Absolutely.
Because when it comes to the sensationalistic side, that is what actively detracts from real research going on. And I've found it very interesting, people such as Hal Puthoff, people like Robert Bigelow. I'm on this odd secret mailing list with like Jack Sarfati and stuff like that. And I get these wild emails like from all these different physicists and stuff. And it's crazy. And I think a lot of these guys are literally read into these things on so many levels and topics, because of their crossover. I think that the people researching it and funding it and putting money out there government-wise probably most definitely realize the utter connection between these things, be it UFOs and the paranormal, UFOs and remote viewing, the paranormal and remote viewing, all that stuff. There is an extreme crossover when it comes to the fact, as we have discussed so many times before, Daniel, that it's all frequency.
Definitely. And I think that there will continue to be more discoveries made, and it'll help to shed light upon some of these things in a way that, like you said, people have been talking about these things for years. They've been looking into them for so long. Sometimes it's isolated or it's focused into a very specific discipline. But as we continue, I think there will be a little bit more to work with in relation to some of the data that's been collected in many of these different areas of focus, whether it's ufology, phantasmology, or spectrology, which is kind of a technical term for the paranormal, you know, in our attempt to better understand it, and many of these other studies in consciousness as well. I'm fascinated by all of it. So the experience that I had that I documented, I'm kind of piecing together a little bit of a montage of some of our time there this last weekend. And I'm going to put together a video for some people to check out. Great. Up on the Vortex, of how our night went and, you know, the good time that we had.
Well, and, you know, even talking crossover of research, things like that, the crossover of research when it comes to cryptids and the paranormal, cryptids and UFOs, UAPs, now, this upcoming weekend, of course, our guest in the previous segment was the amazing Craig Wohlheter, of Crypto Mundo, and also of the Texas Bigfoot Conference. You'll be going to that this weekend, correct?
That is correct. You know, it's such a good time. This will be, I think, my 9th time in a row. It's such a interesting way for us to see that, you know, it's not just something that we can hear about on these TV shows or just strange stories that you hear kind of being passed around sometimes at parties or wherever else. But, yeah, you know, these are real people really doing investigative work, really documenting experiences and encounters of creatures and or maybe something else that we just really don't know much about. And we're trying to figure that out. And so I'm really excited to be coming to the 2022 Texas Bigfoot Conference in Jefferson, Texas, which, as you know, and as Craig is excited to be able to be a resident of now, the Bigfoot capital of Texas, declared so by the mayor.
That is correct. And, you know, I'm looking forward to going to it as well. This has probably amongst all the conferences that I've been going to, been the most fun community to get to know aside from the conferences, you know, because there is a concept, when it comes to cryptozoology of really, really being open-minded about a lot of things and really having to be open-minded. Because there is so much out there when it comes to cryptozoology, but you really do have to comb through it, and you really have to do, once again, much like paranormal or UAPs, what have you, put it up against your own belief system.
You're right. And I think that just as you said, with all of these different disciplines, you find the communities of people who involve themselves with these things, whether intentionally or having been kind of thrown into it because of an experience and trying to better understand something they had happened, you find that, again, there are many different outlooks, many viewpoints, beliefs, different ways of going out to try to collect data. And as with many social circles, also many disagreements about what's going on, how to interpret findings or experiences. So that's always interesting. And but I think that everyone, for the most part, who is involved with a conference like this is very open-minded and very civil when it comes to trying to figure out what's happening in a way without completely demeaning anyone or belittling anyone's beliefs or being disregarding. Everyone's got something that they can bring to the table and be willing to be open about, because we're all learning. We're all trying to figure this out together. We might not all be in it for the same reasons. We might not even all be trying to do the same thing, but I think that we're all at least connected by the fascination with something mysterious, unknown, and unexplained. And I think that with the amount of people that this type of event garners the interest of, everyone usually leaves with some insights. And, you know, it's going to be, on the Bigfoot weekend. The third weekend of every October has been dedicated as, the official Bigfoot day. It's one of those things, again, that the mayor has declared. I think just having a town even insinuate anything related to Bigfoot at all is fascinating, because most people just laugh it off. They think maybe, Harry and the Hendersons, or they just think about the, you know, funny pictures that they see, or, you know, Jack Link's beef jerky commercials or something. But, you know, right. And this pop culture has had a big part, I think, in raising awareness, ironically, to the reality that we don't really know everything that's out there. And it's become sort of a catch-all, Bigfoot. It's something that we use as a way to describe a possible creature that may still exist or that might have been here the whole time, that has just sort of evaded our detection. And I like that idea, because it gives people a sort of a fun, non-threatening, I mean, ironically, that the commercials depict, you know, him doing violent things. It's like, we kind of get this idea that it's fun, you know, and to me, I think that it can be a lot of fun. And, you know, there are a lot of things that we can challenge scientifically and really get into some deep stuff. But I think for the most part, everyone who goes to an event like this, you find a mixture of information and entertainment. And that's what you see in a lot of these shows, like you mentioned, too. It's not got, you know, a lot of just one thing. It has to kind of have a variety just so it can be broad enough to hit the base public and hit the base of the population, because, you know, most people watching stuff like this, they might not be like hardcore researchers or anything. They just might be just lay people who are just flipping channels or just want to watch something and are have a slight enthusiasm in it. With the people who show up at the conference, it gets all kinds of people.
Oh yeah.
And, and that's something I think it really helps to establish a sense of direction for, is that, you know, the shows are great because it hits something in the social awareness that the conferences can really add another layer to. Because if you're really interested, you can say, oh, wow, you know, there's a conference about this. There are people who are going to go talk about it. Wow. You know, so that's something I think that really helps to build a sense of community beyond just watching a show. And I think that the Texas Bigfoot Conference, now being over 20 years old, has been one of the longest running Bigfoot and cryptozoology related events out there. And it's fun because a lot of people don't think that Bigfoot has anything to do with Texas, but it's one of, and just like with UFOs, I think because of population density and all of this too, it's one of those states that has the highest amount of reported sightings. So we can only think about all the things that are never reported by people who, you know, not because they don't just want to or they don't feel comfortable, because they probably don't know how. So this also helps people to come out of the woodwork. They say, you know what? I haven't thought about this in years, but I also saw something. And so it lets people kind of have a supportive network of a community to share something which otherwise their friends and family or the closest people to them might not really, you know, be willing to hear them out on. So I like that part of the community. It's always a wonderful experience.
Well, Daniel, I want to thank you once again for always coming on the show. Let everybody know where they can go to follow the Vortex. I'm looking forward to seeing you this weekend. I can't wait. It's going to be super fun. So let everybody know where they can go to follow you, where they can go to keep up with the latest and greatest.
Sure. Thanks, Chris. So I'll be at the conference. You can come see us all in person. Those events are always great to do that. But if you're not able to, I try to share what I can on the Vortex YouTube channel, as well as our social media connections. You know, you can go to Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. Those are the big ones. And you can also email me, DanielAllenJones@hotmail.com. I like to, you know, follow up with anyone who's interested if they want to share anything or just ask something that they have a question about. Let's continue the discussion there. And, you know, I'm honored to be, returning once again on Curious Realm. It's always a wonderful show. So I'm glad to be here with you. And I really appreciate this opportunity, Chris. So thanks so much.
Man, you're always welcome on this show. I love our conversations both on and off air. Like I said, I cannot wait. I'm a little upset that I have to rush out after it's done, because the post-conference conversation is my favorite. It's just so great with this community, and I'm so sad that I'm going to miss it. So thank you once again for coming on. I look forward to seeing you this weekend, and take care, bud. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, Chris. Thanks so much.
All right. While you are online checking out everything from Daniel Allen Jones, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. Curious Realm is where you can get all the episodes. That is where you can follow, like, subscribe, all that good stuff. That is where you can stop on by and download our music for targeted individuals. You can also go and share your story. CuriousRealm.com/story is where you can go, and we will use your shared story with our professionals, with our researchers, and base episodes off of that. So yeah, take care, everybody. Thank you so much as always, and until next time, please don't forget, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye. Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content, or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.